This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We had to put in systems in place where social distancing could be practiced. We had to provide additional water in many of these locations.
That was Sajjad Malik of the UN Refugee Agency on how the global response of COVID-19 has largely succeeded in containing the widespread transmission of the virus among refugee population around the world. Details coming up. Also, U.S. President Joe Biden is dispatching Senator Chris Coons to Ethiopia to discuss with Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed the growing humanitarian crisis in the Tigray region. And also, Tanzania swears in its first woman president. All these and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Tanzania has sworn in Samia Suluhu Hassan as the country's new president following the death this week of John Magufuli. Hassan is the first woman president in Tanzania and all of East Africa. Charles Kombe reports from Dar es Salaam.
Friday marked a new chapter of leadership in Tanzania as the first ever female president, Samia Suluhu Hassan, took the oath of office. The inauguration was witnessed by members of the cabinet and the former presidents at the State House in Dar es Salaam.
Mimi Samia Suluhu Hassan naapa kwamba nitakuwa mwaminifu.
I, Samia Suluhu Hassan, promise to be honest and obey and protect the Constitution of Tanzania. The 61-year-old Hassan was Magufuli's vice president, first elected with him in 2015 and re-elected last year. She will serve out the remaining 4 years of late Magufuli's term, which ends in October 2025. Tanzanian citizens are saying that Hassan's new leadership could bring about positive changes to the country. Joseph Abubakari lives in Dar es Salaam.
Tunaomba Mungu, mama yetu, kashachukua nchi, na imani ataongoza vizuri.
He says we are praying the best to her. Our mother has already taken the country's leadership, and we believe she will lead the country in a good direction, he says. Abubakari adds that we know she's not new in leadership, as she has been in the top leadership position for more than 5 years. For Kiande Muro, a small kiosk owner in Dar es Salaam, raising people's incomes will be the best thing the new president could do.
Kikubwa zaidi ni kwa na kipenda, ama ningependa zaidi kwa wekezaji.
He says what he would like most is for the president to attract more investors, to invest in the country, for the people in the streets, to get jobs. Muro adds that nowadays the situation has become worse. There are no jobs. People are lamenting. The country is built, but in our streets, the situation is bad, he says. Women's activists see Hassan's presidency as challenging the stereotype that women cannot hold top leadership positions. Rose Ruben is the chairperson of Tanzania Media Women Association.
Yeye sasa anapochukua kijiti, tunaamini kwamba Tanzania inaendelea mbele.
Ruben says as Samia takes the leadership, they believe that Tanzania is going to move forward. There's no place that women have failed. Even successful men are the result of women, she says. So, she says, Samia Hassan is able to do her work perfectly. Magufuli died Wednesday in Dar es Salaam Hospital, 20 days after his last public appearance. The late president was rumored to be suffered from COVID-19, which he long denied was present in Tanzania. However, Hassan said he died of heart failure. Magufuli will be buried next Thursday at his home in Chato, in the northwestern region of Geita. Charles Kombe for VOA News, Dar es Salaam.
Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni is suing a local media group for reporting a claim that he and his inner circle were vaccinated against COVID-19 weeks before the first doses arrived in the country. Monitor publication says it will battle the matter before court if mediation fails. Halima Tumani reports from Kampala.
Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni is suing a local media group for reporting a claim that he and his inner circle were vaccinated against COVID-19 weeks before the first doses arrived in the country. Monitor Publications says it will battle the matter before court if mediation fails. Halima Athmani reports from Kampala. Lawyers representing President Yoweri Museveni said they have filed a case against Uganda's independent newspaper, The Daily Monitor. On February 23rd, The Daily Monitor carried a story first published by The Wall Street Journal with the title, Members of President Yoweri Museveni's Inner Circle Were Offered Vaccines from China's State-Owned Drug Maker, Sinopharm. According to the Wall Street Journal investigation, the offer by the Chinese government was meant to promote their vaccines. Similar offers were also reported in Peru and the Philippines. The newspaper said in Peru, nearly 500 politically connected people, including then-President Martin Vizcarra, were secretly given the vaccine, which was undergoing clinical trial. According to the suit, the article published by the Monitor was intentionally reckless, malicious, and published without due care. Museveni's lawyers said the story presented him as having engaged in the dishonest activities of influence peddling, nepotism, scheming, and conspiracy. They add that the article also portrayed Museveni as having abdicated his duties and obligations to frontline workers fighting COVID-19 and other groups vulnerable to the pandemic. Oscar Kihika is Museveni's head of legal affairs.
That presents him in a very bad light, so he is praying for damages for defamation.
Museveni's lawyers also attached a copy of Twitter messages in response to the article, in which different social media users commented on the allegation. One Twitter user identified as Hotim3Mimi tweeted, "What if I told you the jab also cure corruption and ensure immortality on its recipients?" Mugema Steven responded, "Few Ugandans would take it then if it cured corruption." On two occasions recently, Museveni attacked the Daily Monitor, saying it is one of Uganda's problems. He described the newspaper as evil, irresponsible, and needing self-discipline. Museveni denied the claims in the article and instead warned he would drive the Daily Monitor bankrupt.
"That was before we imported the vaccines. Now, the Monitor must apologize. In front page, to say that I got vaccinated secretly when my people were still in danger. I only care about myself. Monitor must apologize. Big, big letters. If they don't, I go for you. But I've already told the lawyers, get massive money from those crooks."
Daily Monitor Managing Director Tony Glencross says it is an independent newspaper, free to publish what it believes its audience needs to know. Glencross says it has not been given much of a choice and is currently preparing a defense.
"In these kind of cases, the court will order that mediation must take place. If the mediation is not successful, then we will battle it out in court."
In their letter acknowledging receipt of the suit, the newspaper's lawyers state the words quoted in the suit, even if untrue, cannot pass the test of defamatory publication. They said that any immunization against a pandemic should be sought by any right-thinking member of society and cannot therefore lower the reputation of anybody. They further state the president takes precedence over all persons, and if he and those close to him are immunized first against a pandemic for the president's own safety, by whatever means, there cannot be any interference of loss of reputation. The newspaper has 15 days within which to file a response. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala, Uganda.
As the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, marks World Water Day on Monday, it says access to potable water remains a challenge for many people in the African continent. Mavis Ochera in Juwaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana has more.
World Water Day became a UN Observance Day in 1993 to focus attention on the global drinking water crisis and raise awareness that 2.2 billion people live without access to safe water. This year's World Water Celebration focuses on valuing water. Dr. Sam Godfrey is UNICEF Regional Advisor for Water Supply, Sanitation and Hygiene for Eastern and Southern Africa. He says the value of water in Africa was more than just its price, as water has enormous and complex value for households, culture, health, education, economics, and the natural environment. He says 142 million people across Eastern and Southern Africa drink unsafe water that needs to be addressed to enable the region to achieve the Sustainable Development Goal of ensuring water and sanitation for all by the year 2030.
If we to reach the Sustainable Development Goal 6 related to water, around 22 million people per year need to get access to water in Africa. That's about the equivalent of about the number of people in Australia to get access to water on an annual basis. So the challenge remains large within Africa, and it remains a very critical cornerstone of development, both economic, social and human development across the continent.
Godfrey says access to water also is a key determinant for controlling and preventing infectious diseases, including COVID-19. He says some household communities and institutions in the region that do not have potable water must use chemical sanitizers to observe coronavirus safety protocols instead of washing their hands with water and soap. He says it was essential that access to water improves across the continent to sustain the gains made in curbing the spread of COVID-19 pandemic.
At the moment, 4 out of 5 people, so about 80% of the population across Eastern Southern Africa, do not have water in the right location to be able to wash their hands on a regular basis with soap. And this is obviously critical to prevent the disease of COVID-19.
Godfrey says a recent UNICEF survey shows that approximately $14 million are needed to improve the water infrastructure in Eastern and Southern Africa to achieve Sustainable Development Goal 6. He says governments in the region should continue to invest in the water sector and also needs to focus on effective planning to cope with increasing urbanization and the effects of climate change.
We know that across Eastern and Southern Africa, across the region, we're seeing a large percentage of the rural population moving into smaller settlements or secondary towns. We're seeing large urbanization, and we're also seeing, of course, some of the effects of climate change and the climate crisis, which is drying out across the region and, of course, leading to an increased number of droughts, floods and cyclones.
Godfrey says UNICEF ensures water supplies to around 5 million women and children in the region each year. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Jiaxu in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
The UN Refugee Agency reports its global response to the coronavirus pandemic has largely succeeded in containing the widespread transmission of the deadly infection among refugee populations around the world. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
More than 80 million people globally have been forcibly displaced by persecution, conflict, and violence, including 26 million refugees. When the coronavirus surfaced, the UN Refugee Agency was concerned about its ability to tackle the spread of the infection that causes the COVID-19 disease. Of particular concern was the ability to prevent the coronavirus from spreading rapidly and widely among refugees living in the far-flung remote rural areas and in congested refugee camps. The UNHCR's Resilience and Solutions Director, Sajad Malik, says refugees in urban areas are better able than those in rural areas to maintain social distancing, access health systems, and cope with testing and contact tracing.
We had to put in systems in place where social distancing could be practiced. We had to provide additional water in many of these locations. Remember, 15 to 20 liters per person per day in an emergency is absolutely essential, which is not even available in some places. So to bring extra water, extra hygiene for washing and all the rest was quite a massive undertaking.
Through the generosity of international donors and development agencies, the UNHCR received $492 million in 2020, allowing the agency to pre-position large quantities of essential personal protective equipment and medical equipment. Money also was spent on general assistance programs, including livelihood support, education for children, and mental and psychosocial support. The agency has confirmed some 63,000 infections among refugees, although it acknowledges this number may be higher. The agency's Deputy Resilience and Solutions Director, Marianne Schilperud, says a major task for the coming year is to ensure refugees are included in national vaccination programs.
We know that currently 106 countries have included refugees and other and internally displaced persons in their plans, and that others are still working very hard on the inclusion of these. We are continuing to work very closely with the COVAX partners to ensure that we're able to provide this access, which is an estimated 20% by the end of this year.
COVAX is a global vaccine distribution plan that aims to deliver tens of millions of vaccine doses to low and middle income countries. UNHCR officials say they are not looking for preferential treatment for refugees, but add it is essential that they are not overlooked. The officials say evidence shows the inclusion of refugees, asylum seekers, and migrants in national vaccination programs benefits the entire community, whereas exclusion carries with it a heavy price. The agency is seeking $455 million to implement this year's COVID-19 Global Preparedness and Response Plan. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
U.S. President Joe Biden is dispatching Senator Chris Coons to Ethiopia to meet with Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed and express grave concerns about the growing humanitarian crisis and human rights abuses in the Tigray region and the risk of border instability in the Horn of Africa. The Associated Press reported that Senator Coons will also discuss the situation with African Union leaders. News reports indicate that the Biden administration has been stepping up pressure on Abiy to withdraw troops from Tigray amid growing reports of possible war crimes. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who has urged the immediate withdrawal of Eritrean and other regional forces from Tigray, said in a statement that the U.S. would provide an additional $52 million in assistance to ease the humanitarian crisis in the region. Botswana, which took delivery of 30,000 doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine last week, has launched a campaign aimed at encouraging people to get a shot to protect themselves against COVID-19. This comes amid concerns over the vaccine's side effects, with many European countries halting its use. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokendisi Dube has the details.
Health Minister Dr. Edwin Dikoloti launched the Amoreti vaccination campaign in the capital, Habaroni, Wednesday. Dikoloti says the initiative is meant to encourage people to get their jabs. This comes as concerns grow over the use of AstraZeneca amid claims about blood clotting side effects.
Botswana, like other countries, is on the eve of rolling out the COVID-19 vaccination to mitigate transmission, morbidity, and mortality related to COVID-19. To achieve this, communication becomes critical and central to ensuring that the leadership, community or public, and stakeholders are informed, engaged, and mobilized to elicit intended responses and outcomes.
Dikoloti says in launching the campaign, officials realized there was a lot of misinformation about vaccines.
Access to reliable and timely information has the ability to save lives, particularly in the context of COVID-19 pandemic, where there has been excess of false information out there. The overall goal of the COVID-19 vaccine communication strategy is to alleviate apprehensions about the vaccine, promote its acceptance and uptake by the public through timely dissemination of accurate and transparent information.
Botswana is scheduled to start its vaccination program next Monday. Last week, the Southern African country received 30,000 doses of COVID Shield, India's version of AstraZeneca vaccine. A further 100,000 doses are expected, with health workers in line to receive the first jabs. For VOA, this is Mqondisi Dube in Gaborone, Botswana.
There has been a growing effort to distribute COVID-19 resources, especially vaccines, in a fair way around the world, whether rich or poor, central to global affairs or mostly on the sidelines. In past pandemics, help was generally on the way only if you lived in a rich, well-resourced country or could afford to pay for expensive treatment, medicines, or vaccines. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Thomas J. Boyke, Senior Fellow for Global Health Economics and Development at the Council on Foreign Relations and co-director of its independent task force on preparing for the next pandemic. He agrees that the mandate for inclusion in global health has intensified since COVID-19 emerged a little more than a year ago.
I think that's right. You see it domestically in the United States that a big focus of the incoming Biden administration has been around equity in terms of how we address the pandemic. That's a response to what we saw in the early months, where you saw terribly inequitable outcomes for Black and Latino populations and Native American populations.
What's another example that signifies that the shift toward equity and inclusion is coming into its own?
A small example, but it gives you some indication. I work for the Council on Foreign Relations. It's a 100-year-old institution, normally very concerned just on foreign affairs and foreign policy. But when we did our task force on pandemic preparedness, it was a lot around equity, both domestically and globally. And that is not normally the kind of thing that ends up in a Council on Foreign Relations report. So thinking about these social issues and what we can do for disadvantaged populations, I think, is a greater concern.
I know a lot of the biggest action toward equity in the world is through COVAX. Would you tell us what that is in a nutshell?
So COVAX is part of a larger initiative organized by the World Health Organization to accelerate therapeutics, so medicines, diagnostics, and vaccines to the countries and people that would need it in this crisis. People need to remember this was a novel virus, meaning it's brand new. So there were no effective treatments to get it, not medicines, not vaccines, not diagnostics. All of that had to be developed in response to this virus emerging. What this program was meant to do was try to spur along that development and then rapidly try to accelerate its distribution globally. COVAX, the piece that's dedicated to vaccines, is done by the World Health Organization and a couple of other international NGOs, and it's the one that has gotten the most money and had the most success of those three parts of this larger initiative. And it was built on the fly. There was no COVAX before this crisis began. They had built it in the midst of the crisis over the past year, and they deserve some credit for what it has done so far.
So would you say that global vaccine equity is primarily only a job for international actors, governments, NGOs, the UN, et cetera?
A lot of what we need to see around equity, of course, has to occur at the domestic level. It's about having health systems that can address the needs of vulnerable populations, programs to support them undertaking the measures that you have to in a pandemic, things that people had never thought about before, but now you do, like being able to isolate, access to masks, or being able to get access to healthcare and be diagnosed early. All of these things drove the inequity, not just in the United States, but other nations. We need to plan for being able to do that in advance. The reality of pandemics is that they put a mirror to societies. Pandemics show us the collective risks that arise from not having healthcare systems that address the broader needs of the population and leave our most vulnerable exposed.
What are some of the vulnerable populations you're talking about?
Like migrant workers. So if you look at Singapore, its resurgence of cases happened within its migrant worker population. If you look at the United States, we saw outbreaks among essential workers without access to health care or an economic means to take the measures to protect themselves. This is what really has been driving the pandemic. And if we're not able to protect the most vulnerable and disadvantaged amongst us, there is a collective collective risk that makes all of us less safe.
That was Thomas J. Boyke, Senior Fellow for Global Health Economics and Development at the Council on Foreign Relations in Washington, speaking with VOA's Adam Phillips. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.